encouraged, not burdened by the history that they create. They know what is expected of them. They are Manchester United.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dames, joined just by Polyquestle today. We're going to look ahead at the upcoming season. We're going to talk a little bit about United's chances, what their goals should be, how persisting squad problems could deter them from a top four race, and then we'll take a look at the Brighton match in week one. So, Polly, how are we feeling at the start of the season?
Not as good as we were feeling at the start of the preseason.
Yeah.
Or maybe after the first two preseason games.
Yeah. I think a lot of that was tied to some hopes about how the transfer window would have progressed by now, which it hasn't really. So.
Yeah, I think.
We're also not as We're also not as confident as we were this time last season, so maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, there was certainly more confidence last season, which hinged on the same thing. It was, hey, are we signing the midfielder? Because we're a midfielder short. And that didn't come to fruition against Leeds, but it very much was apparent against Southampton and against Wolves. And then we didn't sign a midfielder. We signed a striker that caused a whole other bunch of problems. And like I've said, not Ronaldo's fault. Like, it's not like we didn't know this was the profile of Cristiano Ronaldo and that he does exactly what the back of his baseball card says he's going to do. Like, it's right there. It was very clear that profile does not fit the team. And then we signed it, and guess what? It didn't fit the team. It caused a lot of issues. We are now a year later in this situation. So like, the difference is that there's obviously less optimism this year than last, but there's less optimism, certainly from my perspective, this year than two seasons ago or three seasons ago. And that's the big problem.
Yeah, we're... I think the optimism really takes a hit kind of as each rebuild begins, because we're at this point now where is that maybe this process is going to keep repeating itself. And obviously we have confidence. Erik ten Hag is a different kind of manager that, you know, maybe what he's building towards is more constructed idea than what other managers are trying to build towards. But the problem is obviously, you know, what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, which is maybe already not on the same page with where the club is when it comes to certain players or certain recruitment strategies and positions in X amount of time. We've kind of at the end of the summer where, you know, striker was maybe on the shopping list, and even if Cristiano Ronaldo was going to stay, and now that he's trying to force his way out, and it seems like, you know, if he does stay, he's not going to be or bought into whatever the project is. And most of the striker options in the transfer window are gone by this point. I mean, we're linked with Benjamin Šeško. At that price, at this time in the transfer window, it doesn't seem like going to be a likely outcome that he comes to Old Trafford. Other than that, I mean, I don't really see what are other than sticking with Martial and Ronaldo, maybe. And then after that, you know, maybe putting Rashford at striker or getting someone from the academy.
So the striker thing is part of the reason. I mean, obviously the club, there's a couple things. Like, the club has come out very firmly and said Cristiano Ronaldo is not for sale. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is, I guess, save face, try to, you know, make it, so he can't leave on whatever deal, but like, really, you should be letting him go on whatever deal. Like, you should, like, don't charge a transfer fee. Juventus charged 12.5 million pounds or euros for Ronaldo when they paid 100 3 years prior. The other reason is probably, like, the Glazers love him, and Joel Glazer probably doesn't want to lose him. That's a separate issue. But one of the big things going on here is that they've been caught with their pants down. And that's the whole thing, is that they had this plan. A lot's been made about, especially at the time of when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was the interim and Ed Woodward walked into his office early on, and Solskjaer already had a plan for what the team's going to look like in 3 years. And he said, these are my targets, et cetera. And I think it's safe to assume at this point, Jadon Sancho was among those targets, and Erling Haaland was amongst those targets, because Sancho was not, it was going to be impossible to get him to move from Dortmund after a year, and he wasn't a priority. But, like, at the end of that window, all of a sudden it was like, hey, do you think we could get Jadon Sancho? Like, maybe we can boost this up by a year. And then that December, they really went hard for Erling Haaland, and they almost got him in January. They pulled out of the deal for good reason. Basically, that deal was going to give Mino Raiola more control, and the deal that he signed with Borussia Dortmund gave Mino Raiola more control over the player than the club had over the player. And it was clear that what they were trying to do was move him somewhere, literally in 18 months' time, when that or in a year and a half, whatever the time was, but the summer of 2022, they were going to try to move him for big money so that everybody gets paid, including the original club. And United didn't want that. United wanted this guy to be here for 8 years, 8 to 10 years. So they, you know, and from there, it was a new targeted approach of what they do. They didn't go out and sign, fine, let's go and sign somebody else on a 5-year deal. They went and they got Odion Ighalo on loan until the end of the season and said, so this will be able to reshape everything and address this need and be, you know, and not be tied down by anything. And they looked at what was available in the summer. Not much. So they went and they got Edinson Cavani on a 1-in-1-year deal. And where we can, again, evaluate next summer. And you're here for 2 years. And guess who's available in 2 years for a very reasonable transfer fee? And that's part of the reason why Ole Gunnar Solskjaer went and begged Cavani to stay last season. Because he was like, we just need you for another year because you're the stopgap. Until we have these long-term targets. And, you know, I'm sure they are actually, I don't want to say I'm sure because there's a lot of things that are causing me to question some other things, but say they had other long-term targets and some of those fell off and stopped performing and others suddenly burst onto the scene and become and get onto that list. But you have an idea of who's 2022. And it seemed like they were always operating with that in mind. And then last summer, they blew it up because Ronaldo was they signed Ronaldo on a 2-year deal with an option for a 3rd year. They thought they were set for 2 years, maybe 3. So all those targets, forget them. We'll evaluate this in 2024 or 2023 or 2024. And we'll have a new set of targets. And they had an opportunity to sign Darwin Nunez well before Liverpool came into the picture for less money than Liverpool paid. And they're like, no, we don't need that because we have Ronaldo. I'm like, why would Nunez want to come and sit on the behind Ronaldo? They're not the kind of that's not a pair that could play at the same time. So they just let everybody go. And then suddenly Ronaldo comes out and says, I don't want to be here anymore. Yeah. They've been caught with their pants down that they're just like, no, like you're under contract. You're going to be here. And that's probably to the detriment of everybody. And Erik ten Hag is already just like, I don't want to deal with this fucking shit.
Yeah. But this is kind of a pattern that we've seen for United, regardless of who the manager is, they kind of jump at these big signing opportunities with the expectation and immediately fix things and immediately make the team more competitive, sell shirts, sell adverts, all that shit.
I don't even know if that's the case. The trend is they go for opportunistic signings. And we know, like, Rafael Varane was offered to them in January. And they basically were like, yeah, they had that deal wrapped up so, like, so many things were agreed well before the market, the transfer window even opened. It's weird that, like, that deal dragged on to the that he wasn't unveiled until the first game of the season, because they had that thing wrapped up so early. And I think there was some pushback from Solskjaer being like, no, like, midfield. But, like, Varane was offered to them, and they jumped at that. And that's the thing. You should
– or potentially injury, injury-related things.
Right. But, like, you should always – there should always be red flags going off when clubs like Real Madrid or Manchester United or Bayern Munich or even Manchester City are willing to let a player go when they're, like, 28. That's usually because that club is like, your best years are behind you. You might have one or two more years left in you, but we don't want to give you a new contract for much longer than that. We're not going to pay you what you think you can, what you can demand on the open market. And most of the time, you know, as United came in and paid Rafael Varane more, and Chelsea are paying Raheem Sterling more, you can get more money elsewhere. And they're happy to let another club pay you more elsewhere, because United, like, good coaches, Pep Guardiola, Bill Belichick, Alex Ferguson, they know it's better to get rid of a player a year too early, let him go and have a great year for somebody else the next year, rather than hold on to him and get rid of him a year too late, and all of a sudden you're stuck with it. Like, that's Sir Alex Ferguson, his last move was attempted to get rid of Wayne Rooney, because he said, you've got 1 year left in him at best. And he did. He started out the David Moyes season very well, and second half of the season he was doing much less, and he was a shell of himself by the time Van Gaal came. And that was not the Wayne Rooney that we know and love. That was not a Wayne Rooney that deserved to be making the kind of money that he was making. Fergie knew that. He wanted to get rid of him. So, like, when there should be alarm bells going off when clubs are willing to get rid of a Bastian Schweinsteiger or a Rafael Varane, and United were just – or even a Cristiano Ronaldo, when they're willing to really get rid of him.
I mean, I'm struggling. I'm struggling to realize, see where you disagreed with me then. I feel like that's kind of what I was saying. I mean, we both had this reaction when the Ronaldo signing happened, that it was similar to Alexis Sanchez. It was like this kind of signing that,
yeah,
on paper felt really, like, on paper, a lot of people saw reasons as to why and kind of ignored the red flags as to why this player was available in the first place.
So there is something you said that I disagreed with. I forgot what it was, but, like, overall, the consensus, I do agree with you on that. They're a team, they look for the opportunistic signings and not necessarily the ones they need. And, like, you spent $36 million on Rafael Varane, and all reports now, Andy Mitten reported on The Athletic, is that he's the fourth choice center back, and that makes sense. Maguire's going to be in there. You would think Lisandro Martinez is going to be in there. He's basically, all throughout preseason, started Maguire and Lindelof together, and that might be your center back partnership on Sunday, or if not, it's going to be Martinez. But, like, it seems Lindelof is above Varane in the pecking order, and that makes sense too, because Erik ten Hag likes defenders that can play with the ball at their feet, and Rafael Varane can't. Every time he played last year, he looked so uncomfortable to have the ball at his feet, to the point that Ralf Rangnick started hiding him in possession. Like, he would have Nemanja Matic stand on top of him so that the ball went to Matic rather than Varane. Like, you spent $36 million on a player who is your fourth choice player a year later. And that's the concerning bit that has come, that has been with this club for a year. Like, the real concerning part now is not just how they've acted, but how they are continuing to act, because it's a new regime now. It's Richard Arnold. He is leaving this to John Murtagh and Darren Fletcher. And the number one thing, besides the opportunistic signings, is, and this is where everybody keeps saying, like, oh, back the manager, is their lack of backup options is deeply concerning. You look at midfield, and if you go back, let's go back to, okay, they signed Fred. A year later, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said, we need another midfielder. He wanted Sean Longstaff. Okay, say what you want about that, but that was his target. Newcastle said 50 million, and they went, no, not worth it. Cool, fine. Who's your backup to that? Who's your second option? Like, who else can you call and say, oh, like, we could get you on for 28 million? Didn't have one. A year later, they rolled out the red carpet for Jude Bellingham and said, and pulled out all the stops, and Bellingham chose to go to Borussia Dortmund. Who's your backup option? They didn't have one, so they didn't bring in anybody, and the position got thinner. And then a year later, they went after Eduardo Camavinga, who chose to go to Real Madrid. Okay, who's your backup option? They didn't have one. And now you're going with Frankie de Jong, who is, by all, like, from what it's looking like, he's going to do everything possible to stay at Barcelona. I don't think this is just a money thing. He's certainly not leaving until he gets his money. I don't think he wants to leave to begin with. Who's your backup option? You also lost two midfielders, and you didn't bring one in. Like, Christian Eriksen maybe can be a midfielder, but he's played most of his career as an attacking midfielder or a wide midfielder. He's much more similar to Juan Mata than he is to a Paul Pogba that you lost. And yeah, he has played in a pivot a bit in his career. He did so at Spurs in his final season before he went to Inter. And guess what? That was also when Spurs were terrible. Like, I don't know if we should be relying on Christian Eriksen to come in and play alongside Fred or Scott McTominay and be like, oh yeah, we brought in something here.
I was Aaron and Case's podcast just debuted yesterday, and Aaron made, I agree with what was like, think about Christian Eriksen's kind of positioning and what he can and can't do. More that analysis is that Christian Eriksen and
31.
Yeah, 31. And you can't like expect, even if he does come in and plays in a pivot and does a really good job, you can't expect him to do that for 38 season. You can't expect him to do that for 50 matches over the cups and tournaments. It's just not.
You can't expect him to do it for 30 matches. And yeah, by the way, Christian Eriksen is not a regular 31-year-old player. He is a 31-year-old player with a giant elephant in the room in terms of his health.
Yeah. It's this goes well into the next part of what I wanted to talk about, because,
well, yeah, just hold on.
Even
I just wanted to say, like, the lack of backup options is really concerning, because as everybody says, back the manager. You need to back the manager, but you also, like, yeah, you need to go after the players that he wants, but you also just need to give him players and the right, like, if you can't get the players that he wants, that's fine. That's not the end of the world. You still have to get him players. And, like, where is that? Where is the department here that says, when he says, I want Frankie de Jong, you have to sit there. Where's your football scouting something, technical staff, to be like, what is it about Frankie? What is the profile that you're looking for? And it's like, you lay out the profile and you go, he checks 11 out of 10 boxes, because he is, as you know, that's really the thing. It's like, there's Frankie de Jong is the perfect embodiment of what Ten Hag is looking for, because he created Frankie de Jong. Okay, we can't get Frankie de Jong, and he checks 11 out of 10 boxes. How about this guy who checks 8 out of 10? Or 9 or 7? Like, someone else. So, like, as Saweda said, it's Frankie de Jong or bust for him, the way that Thiago was for Pep or Van Dijk was for Klopp. But, like, look at all the other guys that they have brought in. When Klopp wanted Julian Brandt, and they went, we're not getting Julian Brandt. And they went, but this Mo Salah guy has the same profile, and he does all the same things. We're going to give you him. And look, there's plenty of examples where managers don't get their first choice player, but your sporting department is able to be like, we can't get you this guy. What about this guy? He's of the same profile. You can use him the same way. And United just don't have that. They don't have backup options. They couldn't get Jack Grealish, and they couldn't get James Maddison. And so they went, well, Donny Van de Beek's available. Let's just get him. Not the same player at all. And it seems that's the old thing, but the new regime seems to be continuing in that way where we're leaving Erik ten Hag severely understaffed. And the big concern here is, sure, like, let's say Christian Eriksen comes in and he's unbelievable. Okay. You lost Paul Pogba, you lost Nemanja Matic. Even if Eriksen comes in and replaces one of them, that's all he's doing is replacing one of them when you weren't good enough with them. Like, you needed more than just Paul Pogba. So to just replace him and then not upgrade anything else isn't going to help you. And the whole problem was Pogba was very injured, got hurt a lot. And what happened when he got hurt? Team couldn't win. If any of these guys, if this team is a Jadon Sancho injury away from being garbage.
Yeah, I mean, the current attack stays healthy, which it already hasn't, by the way. Martial injury happened.
Right.
Keep him out of the first game. Even if, you know, Bruno Fernandes, Jadon Sancho, Marcus Rashford, even if they can stay healthy for an extended season and play most of the games, you've still got this problem that, one, they have in Frankie de Jong, finding midfielders who, you know, help the transition from defense to attack. You haven't since then, Frankie De Jong. You haven't brought in a DM either. And then you've got another position group in the defense where it's like, what happens if someone there goes wrong? I mean, Luke Shaw's now, but like, what happens if Diogo Dalot goes down? Or what happens if one of Maguire or Lisandro Martinez goes down? Then you're stuck with the same defense that you had problems a couple of years with, you know, getting the ball from to going forward. I think Harry Maguire especially is somebody that, you know, we've seen problems, especially the Europa League. How do we system with a bunch of defenders that aren't very good at passing or aren't very good on the ball? Lisandro Martinez hopefully is going to be a remedy to that, and the pair of them, you know, but still just a very, very thin squad. And you look at the rest of the Premier League, and especially the teams that United are going to be fighting for a top four place against. And I mean, they've all had pretty good summers on paper. I mean, looks like they're, I mean, some people are predicting challenge. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think they're a lock for top four. Interesting transfer window, but it sounds like they're going to get some before the end. And then Arsenal, I don't know if they're going to be good enough to crack top four, but I finishing above
somewhere.
So you have to remember that on paper is different than reality. Everybody always goes with on paper, because on paper no one ever makes a bad signing. Oh, right. That's a great player, great signing. And the overwhelming amount of signings actually fail. There's so many of them flop. And especially when don't even factor in the transfer fee. Because if you factor in the transfer fee, almost every, like, I'm sorry, 97% of transfers fail. Because nobody lives up to their fee, because the fees are outrageous. I am a proponent of less is more in the transfer window. Is you're better off cohesion than adding a bunch of players. And we saw that. We've seen that in several areas. I'm like, if you go back to Spurs made no signings that one summer. And like, they went to the Champions League final the following year. They had a good team. United finished with 66 points, added zero first choice players the following summer, and finished with 8 more points despite having a horrible first 3 games and basically mailing in the final 4 games of this, and they still had 8 more points. Where United are hurt right now is that they didn't sign anybody in that summer. And Jadon Sancho, Jack Grealish, you have to give every signing like a year to bet in. So the more people that are betting in that year, the more problems you might have, but you'll also
there aren't enough of that kind
You'll
of signings.
You'll also be much
though.
Better in 2 years. So
your team is going to be better based on the signings. Your signings are going to improve your team 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, rather than so much in year one. Though that's assuming that the signings you make a year later don't become your fourth choice center back or want to leave the club. It you got to keep building on it. And where United are really hurt is that they just haven't signed. Look at who came in 2 years ago. Alex Telles is gone already. Cavani's gone already. Pelestri and Ahmad have not settled, have not established themselves at the club at all. And Donny van de Beek
might
is
have
basically
to at this point.
Donny van de Beek is as much on the outskirts as he's ever, as he's always been.
Yeah. So real quick, if the audio sounds different, it's because we had to switch platforms because internet and app problems. But anyway, we're back, and I guess we'll look now to move the podcast along. What would you say United's top four chances are?
So I just wrote about this week, in that 3 years ago and 2 years ago, I think everybody was being hysterical in that 3 years over United's top four chances. We were watching Chelsea make signing after signing after signing. Spurs were doing things. Arsenal were doing things. And United, they let Alexis Sanchez go. They let Romelu Lukaku go. They didn't replace them. And I wrote a piece being like, they're going to be fine. Like, this team got better defensively. Their issue last year was they had a lot of 2-2, 1-1 draws. And instead of trying to, everybody wants to try to win those games 2-1 or 3-2. And, instead of doing that, they're going to win these games 1-0 or 2-1. And not to mention that they got a little bit better. Their rivals have just as many flaws, if not more. And then a year later, we did the same song and dance because we saw Chelsea sign player after player after player, and United didn't. And it was like, this is a young team. They're getting better. They're going to be good. And this year, it just doesn't. Last year, I didn't have to write it because everybody assumed we're going to finish in the top four. People even were like, they might even compete for the title. It's hard to be that optimistic this season because they haven't gotten better. This is I look at this and I think the best comparison to this team right now is the 2019-20 team for a lot of reasons. One of which is you've got a manager in year one of his plan. The other is if you look at who probably would have started this match had Martial not gotten hurt, it's Martial, Rashford, Sancho, Bruno, McTominay, Fred, Dalot, Maguire, Lindelof or Martinez, Shaw, Malacia, De Gea. That is basically your team from 2019-20. The team that played a chunk of the season with now Bruno Fernandes instead of Andreas Pereira and Jesse Lingard and Jadon Sancho in place of Dan James. Except that team also had Pogba and they had Matic. And when Pogba and Matic played, that corresponded with their best run of form on the season. Mm-hmm. That team also had Mason Greenwood, who came in towards the end of the year and was a big asset. This team has Cristiano Ronaldo, where if you use him as the substitute the way that they used Greenwood in the first half of the season, he is just as, if not probably, much better than Mason Greenwood. But if you put him in the starting 11, that changes everything. Mason Greenwood had to start that match against Tottenham because Anthony Martial got sick, and like, he didn't do anything as a striker, but defensively they were exactly the same because Mason Greenwood just went out there and did the role. That's not happening with Martial now. Maybe it can happen with Martial and Ronaldo. Maybe it can happen with Anthony Elanga, but that's a big downgrade on Mason Greenwood. And in midfield, you haven't addressed anything. And the other thing was, is that 3 years ago, Marcus Rashford was what, 21, 22? Anthony Martial was like 23. There was a belief of, okay, they're still getting better. They're still progressing on their careers. And Anthony Martial went and had the best year of his career. Now your hope is like, these guys are what they are. Rashford's been playing first team football for what, 6 years? McTominay, the same thing. McTominay's at like 6 years. Rashford's at like seven. Martial's up there. They are what they are. Like, you're hoping Martial replicates that year, and that's the best he's going to do. Like, it you improved in the dugout, and they've improved in some other areas. If Luke Shaw goes down, probably not. Like, when Luke Shaw got hurt in Project Restart, everything fell apart because Brandon Williams couldn't do that, couldn't do what Luke Shaw can do. Malacia looks like he can. And Malacia might even jump Luke Shaw in the pecking order right away. And if Malacia gets hurt, you've got Luke Shaw. So you're good there. You're better off at center back than you were. That's like, depth wise, that's about it. Like, when Paul Pogba's injury that season, they treaded water the entire way until he came back. And they were able to survive because they got big wins over City, over Tottenham, over Chelsea. You're not as built to face a Manchester City now than you were back then. So, like, you can't expect to get 9 points from those, or they got 12 points from those four games. You can't expect to do that again. It just doesn't seem like they've added to that team at all. And right. I don't think the other teams are as flawed as they were in those seasons. So I think everything would have to go perfectly. Like, this is a season where people are going to get hurt. There's too much football. We're taking a break for a World Cup in the middle of the tournament, where Cristiano Ronaldo is going to play like every second for Portugal. Christian Eriksen is going to play every minute for Denmark. If Jadon Sancho gets off to a good start, guess who's going to be in the England setup? If he doesn't get off to a good start, that's not good. That doesn't bode well for United's chances heading into the World Cup. So, yeah, like, there's going to be injuries, and this team doesn't seem equipped to handle that at all.
Yeah, I think United's best hope at the top four hinges, obviously, on the injury concerns, but also it hinges on something that happened to United last year happening to either one of Arsenal, Chelsea, Tottenham. Because if things go catastrophically wrong for one of, I think Chelsea or Arsenal is probably the more likely that this would happen. If things just get off to a horrible start, or they hit a really bad run of form, and they react instinctively and sack the manager by, let's say, like January, February, if one of those clubs has to go through that entire process, and I think that's maybe the only way that really opens the door for United, barring any, you know, catastrophic season things happening to United. That's the only thing I can see really opening the door for them to find a way into the Champions League battle. I'm just not super optimistic that this team is going to be able to play the way that Erik ten Hag wants them to play for an extended period of time. And I think that it's going to be interesting to see how, one, he reacts to that as a manager, and, you know, the different ways that he has to adapt to that, the different ways that he'll face, you know, stronger opponents like Chelsea, Liverpool, City, that you would expect them to kind of hold more of the ball. I think there's a lot of unknowns in this season, maybe more so even than there were in 1920, which just has me feeling very pessimistic, I guess.
Yeah, I just, like, in 1920, there was a lot more youth that was, like, whether or not it panned out, is that when we're sitting here in this spot, is there was belief in this player can go to the next level. You had Aaron Wan, like, everybody forgets that a year before, in 2018-19, Aaron Wan-Bissaka was the hottest right back prospect in England. It was Alexander Arnold or Wan-Bissaka. One's good at attacking, one's really good at defensive. Which one should be the England right back of the future? Turns out it's been neither. But Wan-Bissaka was very highly regarded, that it was like, oh, we added this guy, he's going to bolster our defense, and he's 21, so he's going to get better on the ball. Dan James was this raw talent that was like, okay, he's going to develop. And again, you were like, Rashford and Martial are reading the line. They could take off this season. And ultimately, Rashford scored the 11 goals that he always scores, and Martial had a great year, and then has faded away. So, like, you know what their ceilings are now. And you look at, we've seen this team when it's just Bruno, like when it's basically this squad and that 1920 squad, but Bruno Fernandes instead of Andreas Pereira, or Jesse Lingard, and it's not that much better because teams just go, oh, we're just not going to let Bruno do things, and we're going to force Rashford to do some creation out on the left, and he doesn't do that. By the time you work the ball, like United, Lisandro Martinez is going to help in the regard that he's a left-footed and he can make the same passes that Maguire can make, but to the right side, which means they could finally get the ball to the right side of the pitch where Jadon Sancho can actually do something. Because in previous years, they just don't pass to the right side. And that's part of the reason why they moved Jadon Sancho to the left last year, is because they're like, well, when you play on the right, you don't get the ball. And that's dumb. We should be giving you the ball. And when they get him the ball, it takes so many passes that there's already two guys on him, and it limits what he can do. So in that regard, like, yeah, they're going to be better. Jadon Sancho is a massive upgrade in possession over Daniel James. You still have a Martial who, like, in the box, does he make the movements that a striker needs to make to, like, score all those goals? Marcus Rashford, coming from the left, does not make those runs. Is he going to start doing it? Maybe. We saw one training video where he did make a nice back post run and head the ball in, but that's a training video. It happened once. We need to see you do that during the match. That there were,
and in coordination with
yeah, game. they're like Anthony, like Mason Greenwood was this 17-year-old that was like gonna be another superstar that we could be excited about. Of how good is this guy? Turns out pretty freaking good, massive piece of shit. And not like Anthony Elanga, we know what he is already. And your midfield, we very much know what these guys are. It's been 6 years of this. And Erik ten Hag is going to become the third manager who needs to play McFred, which is not the preference. Like, everybody bitched that Ollie kept doing it, and it was really just like, hey, these are the guys that I have. Because every time he constantly tried to rotate them out. And it was always just, these are the guys I have. And the problem was under Solskjaer, when McFred played, the team was wildly inconsistent, which is why he wanted to use Pogba more and he wanted to use Matic more. And he just couldn't. Pogba kept getting hurt. Matic was old. So you're still using this midfield that is not great at protecting the back four, really bad at moving the ball forward. So, like, yeah, if Dalot, Shaw, they can help out in that regard, but you're asking for a lot, and as soon as one guy gets hurt, it's dicey. I think it's fair to say this will definitely be a more fun year than last year. I don't think we're going to overachieve the way we did in 2020.
Our best shot at actually winning anything might be the Europa League, and even then we've got to deal with, you know, Jose Mourinho revenge narratives, so that should be interesting. I will say, though, your point about having kind of these young guys come in, a Mason Greenwood type, where you go, oh, he's actually really good, this will be good going forward. The only hope I see where maybe that's a possibility this season is that, you know, midfield is so thin that Ten Hag might actually lean on someone like Zidane Iqbal, or James Garner. And if they come in and they shine, you know, that's going to give us the warm, fuzzy feeling that we've been looking for. Sure. Man United's Academy can turn. But there's also the other side of it, where they have to come in and they can't handle the pressure of having to be a contributor immediately coming out of the Academy.
The good news is they don't need to be a contributor. They need to do their job. And their job is move the ball effectively, protect the back four. No one's going to sit there. Like, this is the thing, like, that Paul Pogba did so well, is that he moved the ball effectively. And people are going to be like, yeah, he held on to it too long and he lost the ball a lot, because they're thinking of that one goal against Southampton where he got caught on the ball. And it's like, yes. Does he hold on to the ball a lot? Yes. He also moved the ball more effectively than anybody we ever had. And if you take a look at how many touches he takes versus the other midfielders, if you proportionalize it, Paul Pogba gave the ball away just as Scott McTominay and Fred gave the ball away just as much or lost the ball. Actually, McTominay was more. Let me look that up for a quick second. I have it right here. McTominay was more in 2019-20 than Pogba. It's just that when a guy touches the ball 85 times in a game and the other one touches the ball 55 times, who's going to have the opportunity to give it away more often in a one game? Right. So what these guys just need to do is they're like Paul Pogba, though, was unfairly judged by, well, he's not getting goals, not getting assists. And it's like he's playing in a deep midfield spot. That's not his job. These guys are not going to have that kind of scrutiny on them. So it's just, are they getting bullied physically? That was the issue with James Gardner in 2019-20. He played a few games for us. He played in the Europa League. He played in the League Cup. And the issue was just, well, he was 18. And he was easily shoved out. Like, he wasn't physically ready. At a technical level, he looked there. His issue was, you can't handle the physicality. And it's like, oh, that's not your fault. Some people are big, strapping men at 18. Some people don't get there until they're 20. The bigger issue is that if you look at there were three kids that year. There was Mason Greenwood. There was Tyus Chong, and there was Angel Gomez. And then the distant fourth was Garner. So now you've got, then Tyus Chong was terrible, and Angel Gomez didn't amount to anything. He's gone. That's normally what happens with academy players, kind of. They're like,
yeah. I mean, it's probably what's going to happen with this crop too, because we see so many of them in the preseason, and there's a lot of hype around most of them. It's just not possible that all of them are going to become, especially in the midfield where there's like four prospects.
The difference between a midfielder who can do the job and a good midfielder will elevate your team so much. It just makes the floor of your team so much higher. And to expect either of them to be that good, that you have to be really good to be that level. That is asking a lot. Most players from the academy are never going to hit that level. Most often, when you get good academy players, you're getting players that can do the job. Wingard can do the job. Like that, you know, John O'Shea could do the job. But even then, you've got two kids coming into the team right now. I think Charlie Savage is like a distant third. To expect both of them to be able to stick around, that's asking a lot. Like, United will be lucky if one of the two of them are decent players at this level.
All right, let's talk about Brighton. So, I have in the notes to reflect on the 4-0 loss, but I was thinking as I was writing the preview for this, one, Mark Cucurella absolutely tore the right-hand side a new one in that game. And he's not going to be a factor. Probably Solly March is going to be in his place. And the other one was, going back and watching that 4-0 United, it just reminded me of how checked out the team already was by that time in the season. And obviously Brighton had a good game. And they swarmed United.
Right down the middle, right into the box, less than a minute into the match.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised it wasn't 4-0 by halftime. Danny Welbeck, if Danny Welbeck converted his chances, it would have been 7-0.
I did not go back and watch the match because why? I've went back and watched the 4-0 against Everton too many, like more than once. So that's enough torture for me.
The gold standard for United fuck ups.
Because Cucurella has been in the news, I did come across my timeline was a video of his final goal for Brighton, which came in this game.
I think it was his only goal for Brighton.
Probably he's a left back. Yeah. It was just labeled as his final goal for Brighton, and I just looked at it and I go, where the heck is our right back? Diogo Dalo is nowhere near anything. Like, he's on the other side of the pitch. And I'm sitting there being like, okay, so where's your midfielder to cover? And I'm like, well, Scott McTominay's in the back line. He's basically playing left center back. And Victor Lindelof and Rafael Varane are both marking the striker, and then nobody's picking up the wide guy. And Nemanja Matic is – Like, McTominay's basically where Matic should be. And I'm like, how did, I'm like, where's Dalot? I'm like, how is there nobody here? Whoever was playing right wing, God, I was like, Jesus Christ, this is bad. So I don't think it'll be that bad.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, my prediction was that United win this game, one, because they always win on opening day, and two, because I feel it's not just Cucurella, who obviously was really good, but, I mean, Brighton play the same way for, what, 3-4 seasons now. It's not hard to imagine they'll just find someone else to do that job. I do think Yves Bissouma is going to be a bigger loss for them. Moises Caicedo had a good game against United. He scored a really good goal to open that game. But, I mean, it's a lot to ask, you know, two midfielders to do the work in that Brighton system and still kind of dominate the way that they did against United. That's not really the way that they play at all. Most of the time, they're having to play kind of compact and find their chances in other ways. I'm kind of expecting it to be a little bit more like that, unless United getting swarmed. But, I mean, you know, pessimism can creep in whenever. At 10 minutes into this match, I might regret saying any of this. So, who knows? I predicted a win, though. I think United keep up their opening day traditions.
I forgot who I was listening to, but they were just like, doesn't this feel a little bit like Van Gaal's first year, where they, like, had a really... Things were down.
Like a great preseason.
Things were down. Then they had a great preseason. Everybody's were on the up, and then they lost to Swansea.
Yeah.
And I think Rooney scored first in that game. He had that overhead kick from right in front. I think that put him up 1-0, and then they lost 2-1.
Yeah.
And it just, yeah, like I could easily see us going up 1-0 and getting a 1-1 draw. Like it just feels like the good thing is if Brighton played Brighton football, that works for United because they leave a lot of space to exploit, and United can exploit the space. And we've seen them do that for the the year before and the year before that. And especially especially in 1920, which is where this team is the most similar to. They were great on the counterattack, and this team's going to look very similar to that.
They beat Brighton 3-1 both times that year. I think that's the exact score that I predicted.
Yeah, and that first one is the important one because that's the one where they did it with Andreas Pereira. And,
right.
and Pereira scored in that game, and I think McTominay scored also. And Rashford had, like, some brutal misses.
Pereira scored in that game.
Yeah, he took a shot that was, like, deflected.
Yeah.
And so did McTominay. Like, Lewis Dunk had an own goal, and, like, it hit McTominay on the way in. And Rashford had that, like, brutal miss from, like, right in front where Martial did all the work and, like, cut it back to him, and he missed.
That was a weird one because the one that Rashford scored near the end, he just, like, smashed as hard as he could, and it went
because
directly.
He was mad that, like, he missed it, that he missed
it
one
went
before.
Directly in that top left corner spot. It was like there was no more room left for that ball.
That was like Rooney against Newcastle just smashing out his anger. Like, Rashford was so mad that he missed that shot that The issue is that Brighton have given them problems, not just last year, but the year before. They gave them a lot of problems towards the end of that match. When Pogba came off, it was the second game of the season, so no preseason, and United looked like they had no preseason. Their passes weren't going off. They were like,
was that the ghost penalty, like the VAR after the final was still blown.
That was the match where it was like one Martial would go press, nobody went with him. Then Bruno would go press, nobody went or everybody else would go press and Bruno wasn't. It was like the runs were there, the ball was there, the run wasn't. And when Pogba was dealing with COVID, he came off, the tide turned, Ollie brought in Bailly at the end of the match, went with a back five, and then as soon as he did that, like they couldn't even get the ball out of their own box. The second game that year, Brighton never really attacked. They had that one chance, and Welbeck smashed in the rebound, and that was basically it for the game. United didn't let them near their own goal, but weren't. They should have won that game, and they did, but they weren't great.
Yeah.
And then last year, obviously, we had the 4-0, and it's just like, yeah. Martial missed it this game because if he was there, it would there would be a lot of space for him to facilitate and find Rashford and pick out those balls and Sancho, etc. It seems like it's a matchup that plays into our hands, and it also seems like, oh, Brighton just might be ready for us and have our number and be ready to curb stomp us because their midfielders are better than ours.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm glad, though, that it's on Sunday at kind of the end of this opening Premier League weekend, because now Arsenal play this afternoon. You'll be hearing this after that game happens, but it hasn't happened for us yet. And then we've got a whole Saturday slate of, you know, I can sit back and enjoy the Premier League starting without being too anxious about Manchester United's results.
I'd rather them play Saturday for personal reasons, but yeah, I could see how, like, if they kicked off at 7:30 on Saturday and it didn't go well, like, that's, if you try to watch any match the rest of the weekend, it'll be brought up.
Yeah, it's just like, that's my Saturday at the window. I'm not feeling super great about this season. I'm holding on to this optimism that we're going to win on opening day, though. All right.
Fun. I think more fun to watch than we were. And the games won't be a slog. But I don't see us finishing much higher. I don't see us finishing higher than fifth. And I think in order to finish fifth, like, Arsenal have to, everything has to go perfectly with us. Like, we can't pick up injuries. Other teams need to collapse. I do think someone will collapse out of the top four, because that happens every year. Last year it was United. The year before that it was Liverpool, and they managed to hang on for a top four spot. The year before that, Tottenham crashed. Before that, Chelsea. Like, it happens every year. Or the year before that, United again. And Chelsea collapsed too, but, like, they managed to hold on. Eden Hazard dragged them to a top spot. So, like, that'll happen, but I just don't see, you know, I see Spurs being the team that'll take advantage of that, not, well, Spurs did it last year. Like, if everything goes right between Chelsea, United, and Arsenal, if everything goes right, United and Chelsea have higher ceilings than Arsenal, but Arsenal have the highest floor. Like, if things go wrong, Arsenal not falling much below fifth, I don't think.
Yeah.
United could easily finish sixth.
I mean, I know a lot of people are wishing ill on Arsenal right now, and I'm one of them. I'm really hoping that this is the year where the bad stretch is elongated and Arteta is out. I mean, I just want to be right about Arteta is, you know, my personal reasons.
Come around on it, and I think he's actually doing a pretty good job. He's slowly building the team he wants. But the thing about slowly building is you have to, at a certain point, take a big step forward. Otherwise, you just fizzle out and you stay where you stay at that's your level, and you fizzle out, and then your top players are going to leave. And that's this year. They need to do it this year.
Right. And Gabriel Jesus has to work out.
Yeah. If Gabriel Jesus, like, turns into the scorer that Pep Guardiola thought he was when he signed him at 19 years old, they're going to be in real good shape. And if it doesn't, then, like, they're going to be a fifth, sixth, seventh team for the next 3 years.
I think it has to be a little bit more than that, though, because I think Arsenal's already shown patience with Arteta to a certain extent where, I mean, they finished eighth, what, twice? And then last year they got back into a European spot again. So I think things have to, like, actually unravel, it seemed like they could have last year with the whole Aubameyang thing, and they could have earlier with he did handle that well.
I think if he finishes fifth this year, like, it's still, like, especially if he finishes, like, a good fifth and not like third and fourth both tie on 66 points, but like they're up in the 70s and, like, we finished just outside. He gets another year, but, like, I think if he finishes fifth this year, like, they're probably going to be outside the top four next year, and then it's like he has to go.
Right, because this is your ceiling at this point.
Right.
That's kind of what my thought process is, like, I don't see Arsenal being much better than they already are, and I don't see these signings making them that much better. I think Gabriel Jesus gets you 15 to 20 goals a year, which is already what, you know, ceiling Lacazette and Aubameyang were getting you, so... I don't know. We'll see, though. I've got to go, so we're going to end the podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week to talk about the Brighton match, and we'll hopefully not have to wait until Friday to do it. So, yeah.